The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
I'm a soldier.
Welcome to Behind the Pink Mic. This is Dr. Lauren Strickland, and I'm a breast surgical oncologist, and I have two lovely guests in the studio this evening. And we're going to be talking about radiology, breast imaging, breast biopsies, and basically behind the image. One of our first guests is Dr. Eva Bauer. She's a breast radiologist here in Redding, California, and the women's imaging supervisor, Rachel Borland. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for coming in to KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. And I'd first like to start with your backgrounds and, you know, who you are. How did you get to become a breast radiologist and a breast imaging manager, supervisor, and just a little bit about your background?
Okay, I'll just go ahead first. My name is Eva Bauer, and I'm a radiologist here in Redding, and I started out growing up with missionary parents, and my mom was an OBGYN, and that inspired me to pursue medicine. And then after that, I wanted to kind of, in my mom's footsteps, go into women's care, something related. But I just didn't like the nights, delivering at night all the babies. Yeah. So I decided to go into radiology, and then I pursued a fellowship in breast imaging at UCLA. And the rest is history. I've done this for like over 25 years now.
Wow, 25 years. Yeah, mm-hmm. You really have been dedicated to this community, mm-hmm. and truly a gem as well.
Thank you.
Yeah, and how about you, Rachel?
Let's see. I started off in medicine, actually, in the Air Force. I was a paramedic in the Air Force, and when I came out of that, I knew very quickly that I wanted to deal with patients and stay in medicine. From that point, I went on to ultrasound school, and I actually started off in perinatal ultrasound and worked with a perinatologist and looking for those fine little tiny details. And when I moved to Redding, Redding didn't have a perinatologist, and so I came back into general ultrasound. And there was a need in the breast department for an ultrasound tech. And I found that in all my history of doing perinatal ultrasound, looking for those tiny little abnormalities translated well to breast. And I got the benefit of working and learning under Dr. Bauer. And we've worked together now for the past almost 20 years.
Oh, and is that right? I didn't realize you were there that long. Also.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. And so I just absolutely fell in love with women's imaging and working with Dr. Bauer, and it just, that became very, very clear that was very much my calling and where I belonged.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah, some of my most favorite doctors are breast radiologists, you know, the breast team. I mean, you know, we work so closely together. Mm-hmm. And you really do have to have an understanding about, you know, breast cancer and imaging and finding things and taking them out. I was telling my staff earlier that sometimes they'll have a general radiologist or a neuroradiologist or interventional radiologist covering for breast, and they'll place a wire and it's traveling through the whole breast just to get to the target, mm-hmm. you know, and you're like, why did they travel so far? You know, but a true breast radiologist understands that it's got to come out. So I have to play also for the surgeon's mindset of that this needs to be removed, you know.
Right.
So it takes a special relationship to make things happen for patients. So can you tell us a little bit about screening mammography and the guidelines, just some of the basics for our audience to understand, like when does one get a mammogram at the age, and what are the benefits of it?
I'll start out maybe. Okay. So I think people just don't realize what a huge difference screening mammograms make. And I mm-hmm. think people, so since 1989, the mortality in breast cancer, which is one of the most common causes of cancer other than skin cancer in women, you know, 1 in 8 lifetime risk. So screening mammograms have decreased the death rate from or are part of the reason. Also, education, of course, and education has decreased the death rate from breast cancer by 44%. And that's huge, right? Mm-hmm. And that's all education, just like we're doing today, you know, discussing the benefits. And then it's also the annual screening mammograms, which the recommendations are to start at age 40. But that doesn't mean that your breast care just starts at age 40, you know. Mm-hmm. So the self-breast exams should start a lot earlier. And I like to talk also about, like, self-breast awareness. You know, when you're in the shower, something doesn't feel right, doesn't – and especially if you have a lump. I mean, there's no reason in this day and age that a woman that has a lump should not get it evaluated right away. But the screening mammograms are sort of – I mean, having read them for years, the benefit of them to me is just invaluable. They're just like a roadmap. I don't think anything really replaces it. I know there's different imaging methods out there, but the screening mammogram is really the sort of the bread and butter, the basic tool that we find early cancers on. And why is that important? Because the minute you find cancers early, then the survival rate is like 100%, near 99% five-year survival rate when found early. So that's the key. Time really makes a huge difference. And that's where the screening mammograms come in. That's the whole purpose of it. And that's how the mortality rates have fallen. Oh, we just take it for granted now. Mm-hmm. You know, we just think, oh, yeah. But some women, you know, and for me, this is my little mantra that if you don't take care of yourself, nobody else will. Right?
Very true.
And cancer is a lottery. You don't know who's going to get it. You know, most women that get breast cancer don't have a family history. So all those things that you try to hide behind might not be true for you personally. And so to take good care of yourself, which nobody else will, you got to screen for the most common causes of cancer, you know, as you get older, especially, which is like what? Breast, lung, colon. So that's your only really tool. You can't predict if you're going to have it or not. You can't, you know. So screening, that's the power of screening is it's a part of self-care as a woman.
Mm-hmm. And empower yourself with that. Can you define screening and define mammogram? Like, you know, what does it mean to have a mammogram, you know, in terms for our audience? Like, what's a mammogram?
Oh, okay.
You know, yeah.
So a mammogram is where a woman comes in and a very specialized tech who is trained specifically in mammography, not just any x-ray tech, will come in and she is going to carefully place the breast in that mammo machine in a specific position where they will then squeeze essentially or compress that breast down and then send x-ray through that breast, getting an image of all of that breast tissue. And the mammograms that are now done frequently in most places, and definitely the mammograms that we do, are 3D mammograms. So when Dr. Bauer reads that, she has a complete view through that breast that fans all the way from skin on one side to skin on the other, and she can very carefully go through that looking for anything that catches her eye. Mm. And they will do that in multiple different positions so that as she's looking through it, you know, she can find things in both views, so she knows exactly where to look in that breast for the problem that's catching her eye. Mm-hmm. And we'll use that when she's calling the patient back. If there's an issue, that then helps that ultrasound tech, if she's calling them back for an ultrasound to find that area, that mammogram and correlating those views tells her where to direct that ultrasound for.
Okay. So screening... That's a great description. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And so screening is really just taking a look at it just to see if something's there.
Absolutely.
Okay. Or not.
Anything outside of, obviously, what the radiologist is going to look for, anything outside of what's normal.
Okay. And then we can talk about on our, once we go to commercial, when we come back, we can talk about what does that look like when you mention callback. Mm-hmm. What does it look like when someone has to come back for additional imaging because something was detected? So we'll talk about that. We'll take a quick commercial break on 96.5 FM and 1460 AM KCNR Radio.
Premier Oil Change is celebrating 20 years of our friendly oil changes. A lot has changed in 20 years, but our commitment to fast, friendly, excellent service has remained the same. To celebrate our 20th birthday, we're offering $20 off any oil change. All you have to do is go to our website at premieroilchange.com and receive your gift. In Reading, check out our new location at 905 East Cypress. Discount also available at our Lake Boulevard, Anderson, and Palo Cedro locations.
Premier, your friendly oil change. Premier, your friendly oil change.
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Reading Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history.
Hi, I'm Rob Keenan, KIXE-PBS General Manager. I want to thank Reading Rancheria for their support over the years, for providing funding with our storytime books for families in the local area.
Big thing is with Mercy Foundation North. We'd like to thank Reading Rancheria for being a great partner in healthcare and a great partner in giving.
Reading Rancheria, proud to play our part.
Looking for work? O2 Employment Services has been working with local job seekers for the past 20 years. If you're tired of uploading your resume and getting no response, it's time to let O2 help you find that perfect position. Oh, and by the way, you pay absolutely nothing for our service. If you'd like our help, head on over to our website at o2es.com, click apply now, and complete our online application. We have connections with over 600 local businesses. Once we have your information and understand what you're looking for, we can introduce you to all the positions you may wish to consider. We currently have over 100 available positions, and we would love to match you with the one you're looking for. O2 Employment Services, the North State's leading staffing agency. Give us a call at 530-223-4674. That's 530-223-4674. Or visit us online at o2es.com.
Everybody calls us Alliance.
Could someone you know use a little extra comfort right now? Alliance Heating and Air is proud to team up with Lennox to bring Feel the Love to our community, a special program providing free heating and cooling systems to homeowners in need. A simple nomination can make a big difference. Nominate today at homecomfort.org or call 2212-642 Alliance Heating and Air, because everybody calls us 2212-642.
Since 1934, Grange Co-op has been more than just a store. We've been a cornerstone of our community, owned by people like you. We proudly offer top quality farm and ranch supplies, including our own Rogue feed, as well as workwear, western apparel, garden essentials, and pet care products. By signing up as a Grange Rewards customer, you not only enjoy exclusive benefits like special offers and 1% back on most purchases, but you also become part of something bigger, a cooperative that you own and help shape. Join Grange Rewards today.
Welcome back to Behind the Pink Mic with Dr. Lauren, and I have Dr. Eva Bauer, who is a breast radiologist, and Rachel Borland, who is a women's imaging supervisor. And we're talking about breast imaging. In our last segment, we spoke about the callback. We talked about mammogram, screening mammogram, and so now we'd like to talk about what does it mean when you get a callback, and what does callback mean when, I guess, the patient gets a letter or a phone call?
Yeah, generally they're going to get a letter if they've had their screening mammogram and there's anything on that mammogram that catches the radiologist's eye. They're going to get a callback. And depending upon what that area looks like, they may go straight to a diagnostic mammogram, where basically what they're doing is they're taking a paddle that is going to kind of zero in on that area that the radiologist is interested in and apply the pressure there so that the radiologist can see that area specifically pressed on and decide as to whether there's something to move forward with. In a lot of cases, if there is, the patient will go directly to ultrasound, as long as it's not calcifications. And then the radiologist will gather more information from the ultrasound, depending upon what that finding is.
Okay, so you're honing in on that particular area. And things that you would find on a screening mammogram would be like calcifications or a mass or architectural distortion. Mm-hmm. Can you define those things? Because there's a difference, you know, when the road splits, right, from going to like a stereotactic biopsy to an ultrasound-guided biopsy. Can you explain the how you tell patients about I say a little dash of salt on the mammogram. What do you explain to patients?
Well, I think just one more thing I just wanted to mention is that a callback doesn't necessarily, in fact, most callbacks are fine, you know, end up being fine. Mm-hmm. And I think it's hard when a woman gets called back. I think there's a lot of anxiety that comes into that. And we end up either, you know, pressing it out and it goes away, or it ends up being something benign like a cyst or a benign mass. Sometimes we'll still, most of the time we still biopsy if it's solid. But you were asking about the calcification, but I just want to mention that because I see a lot of anxiety. And then some women's breasts are just very dense and complex, and we question things on them more often than others. So some women can go their whole screening career and not get called back once, and then some women are getting called back more often. But that is just because of the nature of their breast tissue. We're being very cautious, and they might be also at increased risk because of the density of the tissue. So it doesn't mean, you know, anything, but that also happens. But the coming back to the calcification, so I get some people that say, well, I just want an ultrasound. I don't want a screening mammogram because that's radiation or that's, well, some of the earliest signs of breast cancer can be these little calcifications, which, like you've mentioned, grains of salt. And we're very good about actually picking those up on a screening mammogram, and those will not be seen on an ultrasound. So, the answer is that the mammogram is really the roadmap. It's really an essential, and the other tests are accessory tests that help us clarify the findings on the mammogram. So the ultrasound, and I know Rachel's the specialist with the ultrasound. She can explain how we look at the one other thing I was just going to quickly mention is I've heard patients come in and say, well, my doctor said that's a cyst. When you feel a mass and your doctor says it's a cyst, I understand, but the doctors are not looking at imaging. And that's one reason I went into imaging, because imaging to me is clarification. Imaging to me is it makes things clear, because you can actually see inside the thing that you're feeling. And you can see there's fluid in there, or it's solid and it has blood flow. So we see. So there's no way a doctor can just feel something and say it's a cyst, because they're not seeing inside that,
which is the fluid-filled lump.
And so basically, unless you image it, you can't be 100% sure.
That's why people assume, oh, it's just a cyst. I had one before. I won't do anything about it, or I won't get it looked at.
And it's it's heartbreaking, that false sense of security, because sometimes it isn't. And that's where people say, well, go get a second opinion. Go do this. Well, just do some imaging. Just ask for an ultrasound. Ask for a mammogram, because we will look in and we will see, and we can, you know, it's pretty black and white.
Literally.
Yeah, cysts are one of the easiest things to see on ultrasound. And so we are very reassured once we set that probe down and we see that. We know, and essentially that's the equivalent of a little tiny water balloon in there. It's a thin-walled, fluid-filled sac, which is very different looking on ultrasound than a solid mass. And we have had those heartbreaking cases where patients have assumed something is a cyst for a very long time, and then we set the probe down and you just want to cry. You know, but yeah, those are very visible on ultrasound, and you know, she can tell very easily with the difference between that and a mass.
Now, before we move on to a procedure, can you define dense breast tissue mammography? And does the breast tissue itself increase the risk of breast cancer, and the fact that maybe it's harder to see, you know, I don't want to say increases the risk, but it may get missed, you know, some percentage of the time? Would you like to elaborate on dense breast tissue? I use an analogy with the golf ball and snow, you know, it's like it's blending with its background. But if it's on the fairway green grass, you can see it like a fatty breast. So what do you tell patients about the dense breast tissue?
It, you know, it's a known slightly increased risk factor, because the way I look at it, it's like really active tissue. And I use the analogy similarly, like you're looking for a cloud of a certain shape in a cloudy sky versus looking at a clear sky and a certain cloud. You're like, oh yeah, that cloud, you know, means something.
Out.
Yeah. So, even in dense breasts, we can still find distortions and things, especially that's been improved with the 3D mammography, which are 1 millimeter slices. So you're better able to see that architecture of that dense breast tissue. But, So I use my clinical judgment when I read mammograms, and I have a very dense breast. Comparison with prior exams is really important, and I cannot stress how important that is, going to a facility that compares with prior exams, because that in dense breast tissues, that's really, really important to have that comparison, because I can't stress that enough. But so we compare, and then we look for subtle findings like architectural distortion, things like that. But then I use my clinical judgment if I have a very dense breast that I'm reading and I just don't feel like I'm seeing through it well enough, I will, and it doesn't happen often, but I will recommend a bilateral ultrasound, just a surveillance. Just let's look through this tissue, because I'm not comfortable that I might not be missing something in this tissue. And so we do a few of those, not a lot, but we do a few. Or if there's at all a question that I look at stuff and I'm like, you know, I'm really not seeing well enough through this. But those are rare cases. I mean, most people, if they have even heterogeneous breasts, which are, you know, mixed, then I can usually compare with priors and reach a level of comfort that there's not change that would be malignant or bad, or, you know, that there's not enough change that I could say that there's something bad going on, you know.
Especially with 3D ultrasound. Or 3D mammography.
That was a huge change.
For dense breasts. The ability to actually scroll through that and not have that density overlap.
Separate it out.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Wow, yeah. So can you explain the difference between, because women will say, you know, I do a lot of exams, and they'll say, yeah, my tissue is really dense. But it doesn't, it's not the same as dense on mammography. I think a lot of people get that confused, you know. It may feel really thick and lumpy, bumpy. It doesn't mean it looks like that on the image. I don't know if you get that from patients, too.
We do. Mm-hmm. We do. And sometimes you have those breasts that are very fatty, and they will feel very lumpy. All those fat lobules are, when you look at them under ultrasound, it's a perfect view of all these little circles, and just the way the Cooper's ligaments, the tissues that run through that breast tissue will isolate little areas of breast fat out, and they will feel individual, and they will feel lots of little lumps.
Yeah.
But when you look at their mammogram, it's like looking at that clear blue sky where you're like, this is a beautiful mammogram. We would see anything on you, like teeny tiny, as opposed to those women who their tissue is more glandular. They have much less breast fat spreading that out, and it is that firmer, denser tissue to look at, and it is very much like looking up at that cloudy sky.
Just kind of not hazy, but yeah, it kind of
makes
it more difficult to see.
Yeah.
So it would obscure small masses, I think, once they get larger and they start distorting the tissue around them, like a lot of cancers will do.
Yeah.
We'll pick that up on the 3D. Yeah.
Okay. On the 3D.
A mammography.
Okay. Yeah. And then you have that little 3D probe for the ultrasound, too.
Yeah.
And you kind of use that sometimes for the smaller things just to kind of differentiate, or why do you use the little 3D probe on the ultrasound?
We'll actually use that to look at essentially the axial view and to look at essentially the borders. And when you're looking at something under ultrasound and you get the idea that, you know on that mammography, you're looking for something that speculates out or that's almost like a sunburst. And when you look under ultrasound and you've got this vague thing that you see, when you can do that ultrasound and display that same, you know, sunburst look to it, It's a definite, like, this is it. I've found that spot.
Wow.
So we can see it without it, but it adds that extra, that extra detail and the confirmation that that this is clearly that spot.
Because you don't use it all the time. It's just certain instances that you really need that clarity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it really just helps confirm that, this is definitely the spot we're looking for.
Wow. Such good information. Okay, so we're going to go into procedure. We can kind of start a little bit, but what about, let's start with the stereotactic biopsy. What does a stereotactic biopsy mean, and what are we biopsying based on the images that we, what was found on the images?
So the stereotactic biopsy just really simply is an x-ray guided biopsy. Mm. So we are trying to localize an x-ray finding that we can't see on ultrasound. It's not a mass. It's usually calcifications, because how are you going to find those? You don't see them on ultrasound. Mm-hmm. So usually most of the time we use the stereotactic equipment to biopsy calcifications. And basically it's... the simplest way to describe it is it's taking two pictures at an angle, and then the you get an XYZ axis, mm-hmm. and then the equipment is designed to guide you right to those calcifications. And then so it's done in a compression, so your breast isn't moving around, so we can, you know, it's pinpoint accuracy. Mm-hmm. And then once we get the tissue, we take several samples, and then we take the tissue and put it on a little dish, and then we x-ray it to make sure that the little grains of salt that we see on the, I'm calling it that, yeah. but little calcifications we see on the mammogram, that we have sampled some of them, and they're now in the dish in the little tiny pieces of tissue. And so, and basically, what we are trying to make sure it's not as this earliest type of cancer, because most breasts have calcifications in them, but most calcifications are benign. Mm-hmm. And when we start worrying about them is when they're microscopic, different shapes and sizes, changing, developing, mm-hmm. you know, new ones, and then certain kind of distribution. So usually by the time we recommend a biopsy, it has to meet some of those criteria. Mm-hmm. But most calcifications we don't even mention. They're benign in the breast. Mm-hmm. But when we start seeing certain patterns, that's when you get, it still doesn't mean they're bad. It just means then at that point we're sampling them to make sure they're not turning into this earliest form of cancer.
Mm-hmm. Which is stage zero. Mm-hmm. And that's why we do the mammogram, so we can find them at stage zero, which right. is like a 98%,
yes.
you know, mm-hmm. survival.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so we cannot emphasize more, right? Right? I mean, we really want to emphasize that to patients,
right?
Especially the ladies that are against radiation therapy treatment.
Right, no, I know.
You know what I'm saying, right? Yeah. Mammograms.
Right.
So patients may say to you, I don't want the radiation exposure. What do you usually tell them as far as what that exposure is equivalent to? Like I've heard, like if you fly to Hawaii and back, that's the same amount. What do you tell them, same amount of radiation?
It is really minimal in the risk mm-hmm. of the cancer. Like you said, it's just like taking a flight, you know,
okay.
to Chicago and back mm-hmm. or something. It's not, it is really minimal, and the effects of radiation are, as you get older, are lesser too. So that's why we don't recommend mammograms, you know, like really early on, unless there's a finding or an abnormality. But 40 is the sweet spot where
okay.
where the any kind of, and like I said, it's minimal. I've been getting them since I was 40 every year, and because I find cancers every day on them. So like I believe in them. Like there's the proof for me every day. And I think you've had them too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Every year since yeah. I think I was 35 when I started.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you couldn't get me to go a year without it.
Mm.
Just what we see on a daily basis. There's no way.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll take a quick commercial break and then we'll be right back.
Hi, this is Chuck Kinney, owner of Shasta Gas Propane. Have you been affected by some of the recent changes in business ownership here in Shasta and Tehama counties? These changes follow a national trend where national companies buy up locally owned small family companies and change the culture and staff and pricing of their product. That has occurred here in the North State also. Three locally owned propane companies have been purchased by large national companies. If you're like me and you prefer to deal with locally owned companies, you may be interested to know Shasta Gas Propane, which has been around for 28 years, now has the third generation working in the company. For locally owned, family operated service and care, give us a call at 530-365-3793. Thank you.
The only real estate agent I trust right here in Redding and Shasta County is Josh Barker with Josh Barker Real Estate. Now, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, Sean.
Now, what happens when someone comes to you and needs to move because of a job or family reasons, or maybe they're on a tight deadline to sell that home?
You know, it's a great question, and there's some really good news to that. It just means you're going to shift your focus when you decide on your pricing. In some cases, people test the market and, you know, try a price that's not proven. But in other cases, what you do is you actually look at recent sales data, you price it accordingly, and in many cases, you sell it faster and even for more money anyhow. But if that's not fast enough, don't worry. We offer an instant offer program where we can purchase your home in 2 weeks or less and get you moved from point A to point B.
All right. Thanks for keeping us up to date. Talk to the only agent in town I recommend. Go online to readinghomes.com. That's Reading, R-E-D-D-I-N-G, homes.com, or just Google Josh Barker.
Since 2019, Organic Pilates has been helping Reading build stronger bodies, not just for summer, but every season of life. Experience matters. We don't teach exercises. We teach to the body in front of us. The best way to start is with our $99 new student intro. One semi-private session, two group reformer classes, and an infrared sauna session. Visit us downtown with free parking. We're right in between curated and theory coffee. Your Pilates story starts here.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wynn Carpenter and Terry Raposa and Janet Chandler. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archive link.
Come out and play. Have you seen the bill? We all have to pay. The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson state of mind.
Welcome back to Behind the Pink Mic with Dr. Lauren, and we actually are behind the image theme with Dr. Eva Bauer and Rachel Borland, Women's Imaging Supervisor, and we're going to talk about ultrasound-guided core biopsy, and I want you to walk me through what does that look like for a patient. Let's say I have a 42-year-old woman who had her first screening mammogram because she missed for a couple years. She has a family history of breast cancer and her paternal grandmother, age 50, and her first mammogram said, hey, we see something, we need you to come back. She came back in, had a diagnostic mammogram and ultrasound in that left breast. So a small area, about maybe 1 centimeter, but it had a little bit of irregularity. And we're going to do a core needle biopsy with ultrasound guidance. So can you explain what that is? What does that look like when that woman comes in for that procedure, your steps?
Yeah, absolutely. So when the patient comes in, they're going to come back to that ultrasound room. We have them change for us. And then prior to even starting that, as I bring them back, I talk about the entire procedure and how that's going to go. I will bring them in. We'll re-ultrasound them, find that area of interest, get them marked and set. And then at that point, you know, cleaned off and prepped, and we'll add lidocaine cream to the surface of the skin. Usually at that point, I explain to the patients that, you know, this is an easier process than going and getting a cavity filled. This is a really simple process. We have great tools to essentially get them numb and comfortable during that test. We have amazing radiologists that will come in and make sure that they're well cared for, that nothing in this should be torturous at all. Like, we don't ask patients to, like, hey, if you just hang in there a little while. We have the tools to make them comfortable for this. And most women that hop off my table at the end of a biopsy are usually incredibly relieved, and usually the first thing I get is, that's it, we're done.
Wow, yeah.
It's a really simple process. And so once they're cleaned and prepped, we add that lidocaine cream to the surface of the skin. Mm-hmm. We bring the doctor in. The doctor will use a small needle, smaller than what they would draw your blood with, to put a bunch of numbing from the skin all the way up to and past the area that we're going to test. We make a teeny tiny little nick in the skin, just barely big enough to get that biopsy needle into. Mm. And then we usually do, you know, 3 or 4 samples of that area, and those samples are very tiny slivers of the area of interest. And ultrasound's wonderful in the aspect that while she's doing it, you can see exactly where that needle's at. We know exactly, you know, that we've got the tissue that we need. And once we've sampled that area well, we leave behind a little biopsy clip, essentially, that just marks that area as biopsied, ensuring that we can get back to it if we need to, that a surgeon can find that if they need to. And if the area comes back a benign process, which a lot of the times it does, just because they're getting a biopsy doesn't mean it's a bad thing, but that that area is now marked. And anybody reading their mammogram in the future will look at that and say, oh, that area's been tested. Leave that alone.
Mm-hmm. That's good. And then what happens after that? When they get the results, who takes care of those results?
So those results are usually available in 2 to 3 business days. Mm. And those results go directly from the lab for our facility. They go directly from the lab here in town, directly back to their ordering provider. Mm-hmm. And so usually by that third day or so, their office should be getting a fax from the local lab. Mm-hmm. And at that point, it's the local office, that referring provider, that will be calling the patient to let them know their results.
Oh, wow. And you confirm that that process has taken place, right?
We
just
do.
Just to make sure it doesn't slip through the cracks or anything.
We do. On every positive, mm-hmm. on any breast cancer that comes back, we are making a phone call to that office. In fact, your office gets phone calls from me all the time, mm-hmm. ensuring that that you guys have received those results. And then somebody in the office will look it up and say, yes, yep, actually we do have those. Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. On general practitioner's office, I'm calling and just confirming that, yes, they've received it and that patient has been referred out.
Nice. So let's say this came back as a small cancer. What, I know for my office, I would likely order a breast MRI as part of the workup before proceeding to surgery. Can you tell me about breast MRI and what are the indications for breast MRI? Because sometimes patients will say, well, can't I just have a breast MRI instead of mammography? You know, and doesn't take the place of mammography, but can you tell me some of those indications?
So the breast MRI is actually an amazing tool, but also has its limitations. Mm-hmm. I wish there was a perfect tool that, you know, would show everything that's wrong and not everything that isn't wrong. So the MRI has a very high sensitivity for any activity in the breast, including normal, what we call physiologic activity, including hormonal changes in the breast, including any kind of what we call growth or proliferative changes in the breast. And I'm using big language, but basically, so it's very sensitive. So if you do an MRI on a 20-year-old, everything's going to light up, you know. So the sensitivity is very high, and a good test has a very high specificity. In other words, it'll only light up something abnormal and not something that's normal. Mm-hmm. So the issue with MRI is that if you have hormonally active women premenopausal and you do an MRI on them, or women also on hormone replacement, a lot of things light up that are not bad, you know. The bad things might light up too, but trying to sift through what is bad and what is good is difficult. And so basically MRI again is a good adjunct, but it has a lot of false positives in the younger age group. Not to mean that we don't do them in younger women, because we do. And here again, we do still have tools to sort of separate the really bad but some MRIs are just very difficult to read in younger women, because if there's papillomas or there's this benign little processes in the breast that are not cancerous, they light up in a pattern that's similar to cancer. And so there's some overlap.
Okay.
And, but having said that, as a woman ages and there's less hormonal influences in the breast, that's when the breast background quiets down, and then anything that is growing like a little cancer, mm-hmm. that will light up. And it's, so basically the MRI takes advantage of the patterns of blood flow to the tumor. Mm-hmm. And that's why we give IV contrast, and tumors take up the blood flow really fast and release it really fast. And the background tissue usually just takes it up slower and releases it slower. Mm. And so then we can have a computer, you know, map it all out for us. And it is a great tool. It's just that it's not like a perfect tool. And it's not, you know, it has its limitations. Otherwise, you know, it would be like the perfect thing. Mm-hmm. But I think the main advantage is first screening women that have genetic risks, because any kind of change, and then again the yearly pattern, so we know what the background tissue looks like, so then we can see any changes. So changes are really big in all the imaging, the breast imaging. And then the other thing is, of course, when they have a cancer diagnosis, to look for additional lesions or areas that are enhancing that are that there's no lesion. Like sometimes you can have just the tissue's taking up the blood, but it's already turning. You know, like there's no lesion there yet. You don't have a mass. You don't have a, you know, calcifications yet. There's a type of cancer that doesn't have calcifications and doesn't have a mass, the non-calcified DCIS. Yeah. So, but you can see these patterns of enhancement that will then direct you to those areas. And then lymph nodes also, but we do screen with ultrasound too for lymph nodes. But MRI, it definitely has its place, but it's not like the answer, and it's not like it's not an optimal screening tool.
Now, I know patients get upset. You probably get the calls. We get the calls sometimes about if they're on HRT, hormone replacement therapy, and they need an MRI, or timing their cycles, right? Is it day 7 through 14 where that activity, the estrogen activity, is not as, I guess, prominent in the breast tissue? But sometimes they're like, well, I didn't want to do that, or how come, you know? But I said, well, if you want a good image, you know, you don't want to have to repeat in 6 months because, you know, they weren't quite sure because they didn't get a great image. So, you know, it's what we got to do sometimes.
Well, the calming the hormones down calms the background down. Mm-hmm. So then things that matter show up better. They're not obscured again by all the background noise
that
is there from the hormone activity. And so that's the reason. We just try to optimize it. It's not an easy exam to get through, and then on top of that, you know, we try to optimize it for the best sensitivity and specificity.
Okay. Now, what about breast implants? We just spoke about that a little bit on the break. Breast implants in general, obscuring things potentially, but also if you could talk about that, and also the indications for doing breast MRI for implants, like if there's a leak or something like that.
So, breast implant, you know, they're very common. We see a lot of them. The most of the time they're put in behind the muscle. So the tissue is pushed forward and they do obscure. We can't see through the implant. And so the area of the tissue, we do two views, you know, the from the top and then from the side. But even with that, there's part of the tissue that is not well seen. And that's when we, on each implant mammogram, we also do what we call implant displaced views. And the purpose of that is to push the breast tissue forward and push the muscle and implant back, so we can actually get as much of the breast tissue seen. And so we try to see as much of it as possible, but sometimes there are still parts of the breast that are really difficult to see on the mammogram. And that's why I encourage women with implants, like if you feel anything, because with the implant pushing the tissue forward, frequently they will feel something first, because on a self-breast exam or become aware of something, then I just encourage them always, you know, come in for an ultrasound. I mean, ultrasound is like the easiest exam to do. Yeah. You know, if there's any woman out there with anything that she's feeling, like, just get an ultrasound, you know. If you're young, and if you're older, then definitely get a mammogram and ultrasound as well. So.
Now, what about ruptured implants? How does that help?
Oh, yeah.
With silicone mostly, right?
Yeah, mainly silicone. So, the MRI is the golden standard, so to speak, for finding implant ruptures. And, you know, a lot of women have implants for years and years and years. That's theoretically, they're supposed to be, like, replaced every 10 years or something like that, but they're not. And so if there's a concern for implant rupture, then the MRI is the gold standard for that. And, I mean, we have an idea on the screening mammograms. You know, if it's what we call extracapsular rupture, in other words, the silicone has extruded outside of the body capsule that the body forms around the implant, mm-hmm. then we can usually tell on the, or suggest it on the screening mammogram.
Yeah.
But there's also what's called intracapsular rupture. In other words, the body capsule is, that the body kind of walls it off with like a scar mm-hmm. tissue, that is holding the implant, the silicone in place, but it's actually it's ruptured, the silicone implant is ruptured, so you see the little pieces of the wall, mm-hmm. you know, the silicone pieces floating in the silicone, but the body capsule is holding it together. It looks like an implant, but mm-hmm. it's ruptured inside, so
okay.
the MRI would show that.
All right, well, thank you for that. All right, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back.
At Stifel Nicolaus, I am committed to offering investors personalized investment guidance. Stifel is a full-service organization with department staff with professionals that specialize in a wide range of investment opportunities. We strive to give each account, regardless of size, careful individual attention. This is financial advisor Susan Eastman at 530-244-7199. Let's talk today about a personalized plan. Again, that number, 530-244-7199.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. Do you have a crazy schedule and can't seem to get to a class to qualify for your CCW, CCW renewal, or maybe learn to use that new firearm you just purchased? Consider a private class with NFI. Learn to shoot a handgun, rifle, shotgun, or even a BB gun. Classes are taught by an instructor that you choose on your dates and location. Give NFI a call at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and I'll see you at the range.
Explore, learn, and play at Turtle Bay Exploration Park, home of Redding's iconic Sundial Bridge. Discover 300 acres of adventure featuring the Turtle Bay Museum, Paul Bunyan's Forest Camp, Wildlife Center, playgrounds, gardens, trails, special events, and more. Dine at Mosaic Restaurant or grab a coffee and meal at Branch House Riverfront Bistro. Extend your stay at the Sheraton Redding Hotel at the Sundial Bridge, just steps from Turtle Bay. Day admission and membership are available. Plan your visit today at turtlebay.org.
Guys, if you think antique stores aren't your thing, well, you've never been to Memory Lane Antiques Vintage and Collectibles at 1773 Highway 273 in the Shasta Gateway Center in Anderson. Sure, you'll find great furniture and home decor, but that's just the beginning. Check out fishing gear, hunting apparel and supplies, military and war memorabilia, beer steins, sports collectibles, jerseys, vintage photographs, some signed, and collectible trading cards. Whether you're a lifelong collector or just looking for something unique for your man cave, you'll find treasures around every corner. Browse shelves of classic DVDs, VHS movies, CDs, and books. Discover quality copper cookware that's built to last. Or pick up a few favorites from the Amish food section featuring jams and popcorn, even soaps and lotions. Memory Lane Antiques Vintage and Collectibles. Open Monday from 10 to 6, Thursday through Saturday 10 to 6, and Sunday from noon to 5. Closed Tuesday and Wednesday. Memory Lane Antiques Vintage and Collectibles at 1773 Highway 273 in the Shasta Gateway Center in Anderson.
Welcome back to Behind the Pink Mic, and we have a special guest in the studio from the breast radiology team. So I wanted to talk a little bit about symptoms that women should not ignore. So, for example, nipple discharge. You may see women come in with the different types of nipple discharge, whether it be clear, milky, bloody, yellow, green. How do you work that up, or what are you looking for when women have the nipple discharge on one side versus both sides, unilateral versus bilateral? What kind of things do you see, or what would be your workup with the nipple discharge, ultrasound, mammogram, that type of thing?
Well, we would definitely start with a mammogram.
Okay.
It's just a great roadmap for when we do additional sort of magnification views behind the nipple, just mm-hmm. to see if there
is there. What does that mean, magnification views?
So magnification views is again, a focused in, zoomed in, so to speak, a zoomed in view. And it's zoomed in right behind the nipple.
Okay.
So kind of just to say, is there, you know, like since the nipple discharge is happening, so we want to see mm-hmm. the nipple, the around the nipple, behind the nipple, are the ducts looking like they're all lined up, or is there something in the ducts? You know, just a basic roadmap there. And pretty much we will always do an ultrasound as well behind the nipple to see, you know, is there any cause we can find or any reason for the discharge. In general, bilateral nipple discharge most often is a result of something that's affecting both breasts, which frequently will be like hormonal or systemic, or sometimes there's a little gland called pituitary that will be, you know, there's some kind of hormonal imbalances. But frequently they'll still get sent to us to make sure there's not something like in the breast that might be triggering that. In general, bloody and clear nipple discharge colors are the ones that we worry about more. Not to say that the other ones can't be associated with something bad going on. And actually, most of the bloody nipple discharges are not bad, but they need to be treated. I mean, they need to be evaluated, you know, more carefully, I would say. Nipple discharge is not super common, but it is decently common, so we do see it quite a bit. And it can also just be inflammatory. It can just be like your ducts are inflamed and on one side, and that can be unilateral. And most bloody nipple discharge is caused by little kind of what I like to call warts in the duct, which are these papillomas, which are the bane of our of our existence. So they're not a cancer, but they're very scary because you have blood coming out of your nipple, and that can be very distressing. And we are really good about finding them on ultrasound. We've had really tiny ones. And doing a biopsy just to prove that's what it is. And when those little papillomas, we find them in the breast here and there, but frequently they're not causing the discharge. But if they are causing symptoms like discharge, then they go to you to get, we'll put a little marker in there and they'll go to get taken out. But occasionally bloody nipple discharge can be, the kind of cancer that kind of, travels along the ducts, which, and in that case, we will most often see things on the mammogram or ultrasound that will explain that and prompt a biopsy.
Okay. Now, do you do ductograms anymore? Or?
Not really. So the recommendations changed for those to MRI, basically.
Breast MRI.
So basically, the recommendations now are to, if you don't find anything on mammogram or ultrasound, because like I said, we're pretty good about finding those little papillomas on ultrasound, then it's an MRI is the next step for working those up.
Okay. How about nipple inversion? Do you see that often when the nipple turns in and it doesn't want to come out? Do you see that often?
Yeah, and we get a lot of referrals for that because it's concerning. We have quite a few patients even on screening mammograms that just have it since birth or since young, you know, since they develop breasts, I guess. And they know about it and it's not changing and it's stable, and we don't worry about that at all because it just can be a natural way, genetic or otherwise. But if it's a new finding, it gets worked up just, you know, gets a mammogram, gets an ultrasound, and we look for any abnormalities and changes. And it can happen just naturally. Sometimes it's just weight gain, weight loss, those kinds of things, or just like changes with menopause in the breast and the hormonal changes. But we work it up very carefully, like just to make sure there's nothing developing because, you know, there's not a mass or any kind of a suspicious change in the breast that might be prompting that, because that can be a first sign of cancer as well. So.
Now, what about when patients say, I really don't want a biopsy, I'll think about it, because when you do the biopsy, it spreads the cancer. What do you generally tell patients about that to try to at least convince them, say, hey, we really need to do this?
So back in the day, I mean, first of all, I wouldn't have a job if it did spread, right?
Yeah.
But there's no question that the cells get displaced during the, because the needle goes through the whatever the lesion is. So the cells are getting displaced, but what they found is that the displaced cells will not stay alive away from where they were formed. Mm-hmm. So they've done many studies then on mastectomies later or on, you know, on the tissue later, and so they found that, yes, the cells do get displaced locally, just where the needle is going through, but they do not survive, and so they can't spread from that procedure. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I mean, it's been studied extensively. Otherwise, like I said, I wouldn't be allowed to do it, but also you have to know what's going on in your breast.
All right. Well, that concludes our show. And thank you for joining us on Behind the Pink Mic and learning more about Behind the Images. And we'll see you next time on Behind the Pink Mic.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.